Hello and a big warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Chunya podcast. First things first, wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. A quick glance at the stats reveals that you could be from any part of the world. So big thanks for taking time to tune in to the show. Each week we discuss a different topic, a conversation, an interesting story featuring a guest. It has gone on for more than 3 years now with over 85 plus episodes. So there is a lot of content. If you are a regular listener and listen to every episode when it dropped, you would have probably got the essence of each episode. Having done this for a long time now, I have started noticing some common recurring themes featuring our guest in their stories. Some time back, I picked on the origin stories and produced an episode. It was episode number 83. And this episode, it's about another theme, USP or UVP. Unique selling proposition or the unique value proposition are the key differentiators for any businesses or any business segments. And when it comes to the businesses working on climate change, climate action and sustainability, it becomes even more important, considering you will be fighting against the status quo and the existing alternatives. So you need to really differentiate to stand out in the crowded marketplace. Thanks to your feedback, I brought back the co-host from episode 84. But before we get into the conversation, just wanted to give a huge shout out to Jacob and team at Terra Generation for the amazing artworks for each episode. Their USP lies in telling stories in climate, biodiversity and sustainability. Check them at terrageneration.com. And Mission Chunya is now available in one more platform. This platform is created by journalist couple Rakesh and Priya Kamal. They have curated a section under climate and Mission Chunya podcast is listed there along with a range of sustainability shows. Download the Suno India app, that is S-U-N-O India on your phone to check more amazing content. Thanks Rakesh and Priya. Now let's get back. Hello and welcome back Premashri.
Hi, I'm glad to be back.
So what's your view on the USP, UVP of the companies and entrepreneurs?
Okay, so value creation is the biggest outcome of businesses, right? The most important part is how businesses move to find the right value creation. Few of them may get it right straight away, but for most of them, like we discussed today, comes over a period of time.
Are you excited to revisit some of the conversations and stories from our guest and run it through on this episode?
Oh yes, I'm looking forward to it. So let's start. We had a very tough time in shortlisting the stories, right? Because each of them is really interesting. But we have made a choice and let's begin with a topic that is of very much interest to you. That is lithium. You interviewed Energy X early on. They claim to have a differentiating technology. So could you tell us more?
Oh yes. Teague Egan from Energy X, the CEO of Energy X, was there on episode 12. They claim to have a novel technology to kind of extract lithium. Lithium is a very essential part of the modern clean tech transition, especially in the batteries for grid applications and electric vehicles. So let's listen into the part where Teague explains the difference of their technology.
Lithium is abundant, right? It's just a problem. You need to crack the problem of how we can efficiently get it in a timely manner with high recovery rates at low cost. When you're balancing the decision of do we extract it from hard rock or do we extract it from brine, I think the choice is pretty obvious. Extracting it from brine, there's a lot more technological advancement that could be applied to brine extraction. You have all of this brine. You know exactly where the brine is. You can get the brine out of the ground relatively easy with wells. And then it's just about the process of extracting the lithium from the brine. And what came to mind when I saw the evaporation pond method was that there has to be something better than this. There has to be some sort of way that you can treat the brine and put it through a filter, so to say. And on one end of the filter, you have your feed coming in. And on the other end of the filter, you have different streams that the filter can instantly separate all of the different ions from each other, right? It just made sense. You know, I didn't know that that hadn't been created yet, or I didn't know that, you know, there's obviously problems when you create nanotechnology like this, but that was my idea. That was my initial vision, right? So I started doing a lot of research, and I came to find that a group out of the University of Texas with colleagues over in Australia at Monash University and the Australian National Laboratory, CSIRO, C-S-I-R-O, had just developed a membrane, a nanoparticle membrane that could selectively target ions in a mixture. So I immediately contacted the professors that were heading up the labs that were doing this work and started to do more diligence on this breakthrough development that they had created. I came to find that it's a really interesting dynamic in the university setting, right? In the university setting, they don't really create technology or discover technology with a specific industry application in mind. So they had created this ion-targeted selective membrane, but weren't necessarily thinking, oh, we should go use this for lithium extraction.
So you took the technology and you started deployment. So in what phase are you currently with the technology? Have you started deploying it in places?
Yeah, so I took the technology and I said, look, guys, this is really applicable for lithium extraction. You know, lithium is this big problem right now. There's a lot of money in lithium. And I think that this technology would be something that's very appealing for the current lithium production companies. So I kind of put the pieces together down there, getting the main customers involved. You know, these lithium production companies are publicly traded $10 billion market cap companies, and they themselves are looking for this technology, but, you know, it's happening in a small lab in the middle of Texas, and there just needed to be that link, right? So I kind of put the pieces together in order to start taking this out of academia into industry. And to do that, you need to have a lot of development, right? Because academia, you're on a benchtop playing with membranes that are the size of, you know, half dollar. And in industry, you need millions of square meters of membrane in a huge facility that can develop or produce 100,000 tons of lithium, right? So the way that industry looks at where we are in the process is a scale that NASA developed called technology readiness levels. And it's a 1 to 9 system where 1 is, okay, here's the idea. And 9 is the completion of a commercial facility that can develop, you know, the quantities that the market needs, right? On that scale, we're about at technology readiness level 5, TRL 5. And we are putting all of the components into a system. It's one step before pilot plant.
Well, post that, Teague and EnergyX have completed 3 pilot projects, and recently they also had a good capital infusion from an investor. So that's really positive, progressive news since 2019 when we had the conversation. So that's really good to know when a company makes this kind of progress in the time since they came on the podcast.
Wow, that's wonderful. Sticking with technology and working on technology maturity, we had another story. And if I'm not wrong, this one was from Waterscope and their water testing kits. This is a story which, again, you have tracked for a very long period of time. Could you tell us more?
Yes, indeed. I have been following Alex and the Waterscope team since 2015 when I first met them in the University of Cambridge. They had a couple of good pivots since then and they have identified their unique value differentiator. So let's listen in to that part where Alex mentions the value differentiator that they offer.
Me and three other co-founders, we founded Waterscape, and we with a simple kind of aim of trying to empower community members to be able to test their own water. And this was, I think, 2015. It's quite a while ago now. And we started out with one of our co-founders, Dr. Richard Bowman, had developed the Open Fletcher microscope, which is, you can find that now on openfletcher.org. But we had this kind of open source microscope, and we used this to get a very early proof of concept, being that using a microscope, we can identify bacteria much earlier than you could than by eye. And using the Raspberry Pi and other, you know, off-the-shelf electronics, we can automate that process quite significantly. So you don't need to rely on the user's expertise in terms of what a bacteria looks like. It reduces that error in that front. And also we found, so that kind of automated one part of it, but also we found that the most complicated bit in water testing is actually preparing your sample. So if you imagine you've got kind of a tap of running water, and the WHO guidelines, their recommendation of whether water is safe to drink or not is detecting a single E. coli in 100 mils of water. And that's like looking for a needle in a haystack. And when you're preparing that sample, you have to be really careful not to contaminate your sample, because as you can imagine, there's bacteria in the air, there's bacteria in your skin, and the current process was very manual, which meant that it's really easy to contaminate your sample. And when your threshold of contamination is just a single bacteria presence, then it's, you know, you can see how that may introduce a lot of false errors. So we then spent the last kind of the next kind of 2 or 3 years trying to develop a cartridge that automated your sample process. And so what we're trying to do really is to make a system or device that is extremely easy to use from start to finish, so anybody can use it. So it's independent of resource and independent of your kind of the user's skill set or training. And we hope that this can allow community members and key stakeholders that are affected by water contamination to be able to test their water and to implement local kind of solutions into that. Maybe just to reiterate that the central thing we're looking to do is to make it simple. So we've tried to make our technology as accessible as possible. And this involves a lot of kind of human-centered design. So really getting in, getting down on the ground and getting people to use our system. We've done about 4 field trials now. And each one we have iterated and changed the system. And if you look at the kind of first prototype we had in 2015, the one we have now, it's almost unrecognizable. And each time we go on a field trial, it changes significantly.
That's nice. The Waterscope technology has also progressed over the last few years. And it's also good to know that they are close to large-scale deployment too. So let's move on to a story that is very closer to our home. The story of Reimagined.
Yes, Reimagined is another story featuring Shailaja Rangarajan. That's again very early on, the earliest on in 2019. I think it was one of the first 10 episodes that we released. And one of the unique value proposition, what they're claiming is identifying local talent to create upcycled products. So let's listen to the conversation with Shailaja and where she directly shares her experience on the USP.
So India has a very, very strong, informal, unorganized sector, which I feel is the backbone of our country. So even if you, what I'm talking about, upcycling and all, putting it in a nice, cool way, it already exists. And these are people who are already doing this because of their constraints. It's a constraint-based model that has helped our country evolve as well. So when I even talked about these women and when I just started the production unit, the key was, oh, they have no skill sets. But guess what? They all knew crochet. That is a skill set for which there is no value attached, right? And they realized their potential. I said, oh my God, you already know this? Why don't we experiment with this woolen yarn waste? They were like, seriously? I said, you already know crochet. So that is the skill set we are talking about. Nobody trained them, right? It has been handed over like generation after generation. When I look at the sari range that we have churned out, these are handloom weavers who have been weavers for generations again. That is a talent pool, which you won't find anywhere else in the world, right? But Stradley, now with the machine looms and power looms coming in, they are struggling for livelihood. Now, the requirement is tap this talent pool and make it relevant in today's economy. And in the Sari range now, I'm working with rural artisans who do beautiful hand painting. Now, that is an art form that is fast dying away. Now, we need to make it contemporary and make it relevant to today's market. This is a skill no other country in the world today has. You go to these tribal regions, you go to the villages and all, there's a huge talent pool which has not been acknowledged, and they are fading away because that is not supporting their survival. So the key is tap this and make it relevant. And trust me, we will be slowly reviving all these art forms that people have forgotten over the years. This is something which is unique only to India today, which is what we are. It's like a gold mine that we are sitting on, I would say.
Yes. That was another wonderful story. And in fact, I have another connection to reimagine through one of their products which we bought. A great story and really a very nice initiative.
Yes, well, talking of products that we bought ourselves, we have to visit the story of Kadir and EcoHike. EcoHike is the brand behind the Mission Chunya merchandise, and their products, especially the ones that we buy from EcoHike, are recycled plastic bottles turned into t-shirts. So let's listen to the conversation where Kadir shares his USP in creating this range of products.
Sustainability can never be achieved unless it is affordable and durable, and obviously comfortable. So we decided like it has to be more durable, and it has to be not just by words, and we have to have all the authenticated data about how much savings that we are making and how durable it is and how much it is affordable. And it has to reach out to all the consumers across the floor level and all the people. And we came up with the final product, making a t-shirt with recycling the plastic PET bottles. So previously we tried with cotton textile waste and other blends, but unfortunately the t-shirts made with recycling the cotton textile waste is not more durable. And even after two or three washes, the quality of the garment is not wearable, and even the comfort of the garment is very much compromised. So we thought we should not do it for namesake or just for marketing, and it has to be durable. And we came up with going for 100% polyester, where it can be very durable when compared to the cotton t-shirts. And also we added antimicrobial and anti-odor finish to it so that it will absorb and it will have very comfortable property. And even if it is sweating, it will not retain in the body, and it absorbs so that the moisture wicking is very high and air breathability is very good. These are all the performance criteria that makes a garment very comfortable to wear for the whole day at any situation, at any weather condition.
So you recycle plastic bottles to make the t-shirt, but the other aspect of it is also to ensure that you don't dye the material, because that again is resource intensive, correct?
Yes, exactly. So what we have tried to do is our main mission is to produce the world's least CO2 footprint garment. So when we speak about the CO2 footprint, it is all about how much energy that we are consuming and how can we reduce it. So when we are addressing all these points, there are areas, gray areas where we want to highlight. Like, even though we are, as I said, Tirupur is 100% zero liquid discharge, and we are recycling the whole water that we are using for dyeing facility. That recycling process and the dyeing process itself involves a lot of energy consumption, and it involves a lot of process to be done. So we thought like going without bleaching, and even bleaching consumes a lot of energy, so we don't want to bleach the garment or dye the garment. And we kept it as a neutral garment where it looks like an off-white color, so that the energy consumption is less. So that is our main mission, and we are sticking to it so far. And we don't say that we are not going to dye the garment. If we find a technology where we can consume less energy and add the dye colors without polluting the natural resource, sure, we are open to it. There is already a process called dope dyeing, which we are already looking into. And that will be our next phase of launching.
Yes, that's so very true. Plastics is a big challenge, And we have, in fact, a range of stories on the channel too. I think maybe we should summarize the best parts from all the episodes in the future too.
Well, that's a very good idea. We can definitely talk in length about plastics. We have a range of stories about all things related to plastics in the channel so far, so that maybe we should probably do something in the future. But something that we don't talk enough is water, especially wastewater. What happens to water after you flush it down? But we had one passionate entrepreneur, Aditi from Organic Solutions, who has found a novel way to fix this problem. So let's listen in.
So, you know, when we were developing our solution, what we realized was that we need to learn, from the most sustainable teacher. And that's nature.
Fair.
You know, because nature has spent 3.8 billion years doing R&D that is required to sustain life on our planet.
Hmm.
It's just that we humans have moved away from those learnings and we've created all these problems for ourselves. Now, what we have done is we apply modern principles to nature's working, and that's called biomimicry.
Correct.
Or regenerative design, where you're giving more than what you take. And that's where we based our solution. We wanted to purify water, so we just asked the question, how does nature purify water? And we found the answer on the very ground that we stand on. It's actually the largest water filter.
Hmm.
Whatever water that is falling onto the ground is getting filtered through various layers and then finally reaching our groundwater, which we're anyways using. So that's the basic principle. Our sewage treatment system, we call it the advanced eco reactor. It's basically mimicking the principles of healthy soil to filter and to biologically treat wastewater, which other STP technologies are using electricity and power hogging motors to do, or blowers to blow air into the water and then creating a whole lot of other problems. If we take one spoonful of healthy soil, it has more life than the entire human population on Earth. But due to our own activities, you know, it is very difficult to get healthy soil also. So what we have done is we've created the right mix. Basically, we've done our research on what healthy soil really looks like and what it was maybe, say, 200, 300, 400 years ago. What it had was the right mix of organic matter, some inert rock material, and a whole lot of microbial population and earthworms. So in fact, what we've done is we've turbocharged the natural process. This treatment technology is called vermifiltration.
Okay.
Basically, using the power of earthworms and microbes to treat wastewater, because wastewater has fecal matter and other components that is food for this, for the earthworms and microbes. So wastewater is basically trickling down the various layers that are created in the STP. It doesn't look like an STP actually. It can be developed like even a garden.
Nice.
And in the process, the water gets cleaned as this whole surface that we have created gets covered with microbial biofilms. And those are the actual guys who are treating the wastewater. They are the ones who do all the work in any kind of STP. And it's a natural ecosystem, so you don't need constant external tweaking. What comes out can be safely recycled. And working in tandem with nature has so many advantages. You know, like we don't have to worry about separating and disposing of sludge. Sludge is basically this slurry type material of solids and dead bacteria, which comes out of other STPs. People have to dispose it off, so their cost to that. And usually they end up either in the water bodies or they end up in the landfills, creating another problem. So we don't have that. The earthworms digest all of that. They convert it into vermicompost, actually. And so it's true to its nature. There is no waste. Our system does not need constant power. It can even run on solar power.
Nice.
It does not need technical staff to run it. Even a gardener can be trained to take care of it. We don't add any chemicals, so, and we're not contributing to climate change because our carbon footprint of the STP is low. We treat the water up to the required quality. We're not creating other problems like sludge or, you know, carbon emissions. Then we've got ourselves a sustainable way forward, and it shows.
Yes, there is a blur between organic and otherwise. A lot of products are termed organic, and it was good to know the difference Aditi brings to her solutions through the organic route. Talking of organic, let's listen to another passionate entrepreneur, Kapil, who has set up a business around organic farming.
Yes, Kapil definitely believes and lives by getting your hands dirty. We in fact had a chance to meet him while he was setting up a workshop in town. Kapil has spent nearly a decade in farming and also helps people get a better understanding of farming through his events. So let's listen in to that part of the conversation. Kapil shares his story and the differentiating factor.
So I think the USP, I think that we bring at Edible Roots, which I feel that compared to what others in our domain are doing, is one, the integration of the various things we are doing. So from workshops to kitchen gardens to farmlets, like there are companies who do just farmlet type activities or kitchen garden type activities or just workshops. But there are very few who bring this all together. And together, because they are very integrated and it's like a web. So I think that's one USP that we have, is how we bring this all together. The second is that a lot of people who are doing this do not necessarily have a farming background.
Correct.
So a lot of our team members, including me, who have farmed for years, who have themselves farmed the land for years, and that brings a deeper understanding of what a person experiences as they are growing, whether it's a kitchen garden or a farmlet or anywhere else. So I think those two things is what makes our offering more genuine and unique and fulfilling for the customer.
That's so fair. Kapil's story nicely summarizes the story of all our guests who came on this podcast and the guests who were featured today. It takes a very long time to get your USP and value proposition in place, and once you are in there, the growth is exponential.
Rightly said. Wonderful. As I said earlier, we could have done this for all the guests and stories, but we had to pick a few and feature them today. But we will definitely be back with similar episode on similar themes in the future too. The links to all the episodes mentioned in this particular episode will be in the show notes section and on the Mission Chunia website. Please do check them. And your feedback is definitely appreciated. MissionChunia@gmail.com is the ID. You can also leave a rating, give a feedback on any podcast platform that you listen to this on. Finally, thanks again to Premashree for joining me on this episode.
It's my pleasure. Wonderful to discuss all these stories with you. So until next time, this is
Girish
and Premashree signing off. As always, thank you for listening.